Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I'm a domestic type. I don't really get out too much.
Radio X. Thank you very much for listening to the Evening Show podcast. My name is Gordon Smart. It's always great that you come back and download the podcast. I really appreciate it. And today is a really good one as well. Classic album on Monday. It was a good one. Blur. Modern Life is Rubbish. Their second album. As well as that, big treat for you on the Evening Show podcast this week. Giles Martin, the one and only Giles Martin, son of the late, great George Martin, the Beatles producer. Talking about the White Album, it really is a magical thing. So please enjoy it because it was a great little chat. An audience with him at Abbey Road, all about their finest album, their ninth. So Beatles magic and a bit of Blur. Can't say fairer than that.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
So I'm here at Abbey Road Studios this morning to see Giles Martin, the custodian of Beatles material, I think. I'm going to describe you as that now. Is that okay?
Yeah, the custody of,
You're in custody of.
There's some sort of custodian thing going on, yeah.
It's such a labour-intensive thing that you do now. Do you ever actually see daylight, Giles? Do you manage to keep reasonable hours when you're working on things like the White Album, which is coming back out now?
Yeah, you have to. There has to be. I mean, I do other things all the time. Right now I'm doing an Elton John film, Rocket Man,
yeah.
Yeah, which is fun. But yeah, you do, you have to, because otherwise you don't do a very good job. You know, for something like the White Album, which is so big, it's 30 songs on the album, then there's like so many outtakes and I have to listen to them all. You need to, well, I do anyway because my brain's not big enough. I need to stop and go and do something else because otherwise you do need to see daylight. It's really important. Yeah, because, you know, once you listen to 70 takes of Sexy Sadie, you've got another 30 to go. You need to make sure you listen to each one because that's my job. You know, my job is to listen to them all. Yeah. So you have to take breaks.
I should explain, Giles, we are here to talk about the White Album, which was the Beatles' ninth album. It's being reissued, and there has been a volume of material to go through for this. And I believe in some cases there were 95 takes of certain songs.
Yeah, 107, and there are a lot of takes. It was a different experience of the Beatles. I think my dad always said he didn't enjoy it because, you know, they made Sgt. Pepper the year before, which was incredibly well organized and concise. And my dad, George Martin, who was their producer, our biggest argument before he passed away, what we ever had was when he caught me making Pims and not measuring it. He was going, what are you doing? I said, I'm making you Pims. He goes, without measuring it? I said, yeah. And he goes, well, what if it's too strong? I said, I'll add some more lemonade. And he goes, well, this is, and in essence, the White Album was the Beatles making Pims without measuring it. That's what it was. And so they basically, the kids had taken over the classroom.
Right.
And they weren't playing live anymore. So the studios where they played live. And that meant, the resulted in, they worked on songs in the studios, which bands in those days didn't do that much. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't have that luxury. The Beatles had that luxury. So it ended up with a huge volume of outtakes. Way more than any other album.
So how did that material exist then? Because I believe in this instance you were handed some of Olivia Harrison's tapes that she had kept. I mean, how did they? What form did they exist
well,
in?
Well, that's different. Yeah, that's different. So the studio outtakes, so when you're recording a song, are all on multitrack and they're here at Abbey Road. They kept everything and everything's in good condition. There's a volume of work called the Isha Demos, and that is the Beatles went to Rishikesh in India and they wrote so many songs.
All on acoustic guitars at this
point. Acoustic guitars. Yeah. And they came back. It was a bit like around a campfire and they made these home demos, which are known as the Isha demos. Because I think people think they were recorded at George's house in Isha. I think they were compiled there. I think they were recorded at different houses. I got handed on a plate to me 27 acoustic demos, which sound really good. I mean, for my generation, it's MTV Unplugged, but the Beatles, it really is. It's You don't work on something like the White Album thinking, you know what, I'm going to work on this. It's going to be amazing because I'm English, you know, generally miserable as a person. Yeah. And so we'll go, you know, I hope I don't ruin this.
You want to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yeah, absolutely, always, yeah.
Talk us through the process of how you listened to them then, because I'd love to have an idea of where you were listening to them. Were you in the studio or did you manage to set this up for yourself at home?
Quite often in this project, because there's so much material, a lot of the extras I'd mix down. I've got a farm, and I mix down sitting on the farm, and then go and have cups of tea and cake.
Yeah,
and just me on my. Otherwise, I go mad.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You do. And the funny thing is none of my family have any idea what I do for a living. It's bizarre. We were in the pub, and I was with my wife and kids, and I said, "I'm about to do a bunch of interviews in the White Album.
Yeah.
Can anyone around the table name a single song from the White Album?" And they couldn't.
Genuinely.
Yeah, genuinely. I was a little bit.
That's probably a good thing.
I was a little bit depressed by it. I suddenly wrote. They had no interest in me at all.
That was fantastic. Yeah. Okay. Radio X.
Gordon Smart. Radio. X, the evening show, classic album of the week.
X. Right, we're roaring back to 1993 in May, 25 years ago, from Modern Life is Rubbish. I remember it very well because I stole it off my brother regularly as I went into second year at high school. That's how long ago it was. So Blur's first album, Leisure, been a decent success, reasonably successful commercially, but it got a real pasting in the press as well. The critics did not like it. The Guardian said of the debut album, swiftly exposed as bogus trend hoppers, they duly caught the wrath of the Manchester backlash. It's not what you'd call a positive review, is it? The band were also coming back from a really dodgy tour in America. It didn't go down very well. It was the roller coaster tour. It was in 1992, and they just didn't get great crowds for it at all. You've got to remember, at that time, grunge was flying, and maybe some lads from Essex weren't quite what the American audience were looking for. They were signed to Food Records, and they were pretty much at risk of being dropped for a lot of the time this album was coming together. And Damon led the band towards a more melodic sound. Lavish production, he had a bit of brass, woodwind, all taking influence from the Kinks and the Small Faces. So anyway, the album turned out to be a big success. Number 50 in the album charts, all three singles, Sunday Sunday, Chemical World, and For Tomorrow, got into the top 30. Now, the band were working with Stephen Street, who had worked with the Smiths, Cranberries, Kaiser Chiefs, Baby Shambles and Cortinas. What a talent he is. But as the album was taking shape, Food Records in America were thinking about dropping them, and there was loads of pressure in America for them to work with a different producer. They wanted them to work with Butch Vig, who then, around that time, formed Garbage, if you remember. Been working with Nirvana too. Blur put their foot down, said absolutely no chance, we're sticking with Stephen Street. The album came out, music press loved it compared to the first one, and things started to go properly. One thing you always need to remember about Blur in this era, as Alex James once told us, he turned up at the Brits when they won their first Brit, and he didn't have enough money in his pocket to get the tube fare home. It really was a struggle for them. But anyway, this album, Modern Life is Rubbish, went on to be seen as one of the best of that Britpop era. So here we go, two songs from it. Modern Life is Rubbish, absolutely brilliant stuff. For Tomorrow, followed by Chemical World.
The Evening Show, classic album of the week.
X.
He's a 20th century boy.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
The Evening Show, classic album of the week.
X. How good was that to hear a double play from the amazing album Modern Life is Rubbish, 1993 in May, that's 25 years ago. You just heard Chemical World and before that, For Tomorrow. Now, For Tomorrow was the first single, that was April the 19th, 93, opening track to the album. Now, apparently, if rumours are true, Damon wrote the song on Christmas Day 1992 after the record label told him there wasn't a single on the album. Imagine being told that and having to write something on your Christmas Day. Then Chemical World, that was the second single, got to number 27 in America, and it was the only track off that album to chart in the United States of America. Now listen to that song in the background. Blur fans will know it's called Turn It Up. Features towards the end of the album, fantastic example of Blur. Just how they were about to embrace that Britpop era and, in fact, define it. Couple of lovely messages were Blurred have been in touch, the Blur tribute band. I've seen them, I think, a couple of times. For Tomorrow, then Chemical World. You are spoiling us, Radio X. No problem at all. Blurred. Sards85 on Twitter as well, been in touch. Ah, hearing old Blur tracks. I'd just gone up into junior school and remember falling in love with Blur there and then for the very first time. Magical memories. Now, Alex James and Damon Albarn have spoken about how the album was unashamed and deliberately British. It was in response to all that American grunge I was talking about earlier. They fought against that when they were in America. But the album definitely came together despite all the advice from all sides that it could have been career suicide. Luckily, the lads pushed on and ended up ushering in an entirely new era. Loved that. Modern Life is Rubbish, 25 years old. Tell you what, I'll have another classic album for you next Monday.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
So when you get these tapes, I'm sorry about being really geeky about this, do they have original handwriting on them and things like that? You know, as I used to keep tapes, you know, were they all meticulously kept?
Yeah, so they're, in the case of the White Album, you have, you know, the format is 2-track, 4-track and 8-track.
Yeah.
You know, it's 1-inch 8-track and 4-track tapes. And yeah, they have markings of what's on the tracks and when they're recorded and that's it. But then sometimes there's a beautiful version of Julia, which is on this box set, which is John's singing Julia to my dad in the studios, and he's strumming it on acoustic guitar because he finds it easier to sing when he's strumming it and not doing the finger picking. Ah. And Matthew Cocker, who looks after the tapes here at Abbey Road, he just found it. He let the tape run on. And so that's, you know, you have to listen to everything because not everything's written down.
Those are the magical moments. And that's a real thing for the Beatles as well, where you catch the moments of conversation or little interactions.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important because, for me, I always thought the White Album was a miserable experience because, you know, my dad always, I think he found a miserable experience. And John said in interviews it would sound like the Beatles breaking up. But going through all the tapes, and I really looked for the arguments because that's kind of interesting. If you're doing an archive job, you're looking to represent everything. Generally, you hear the band, you know, creating and having a laugh. Yeah. It's funny. I mean, so much is written. I did a thing in New York where I did a playback, and there's a great session tape of I Will, and it goes on for ages. They do I Will. They make up a song called Lost Paranoia. They sing Blue Moon, and it's Paul, John, and Ringo together. And George isn't there, and it's a really good laugh. And this American journalist goes, but I read that, you know, Paul did I Will on his own in the studios. And I said, no, but he didn't. Well, who are those other two guys? I mean, that's Ringo and John. But I read that it was him on his own. But it wasn't. But I read that it was. I was like, you know, you've got to understand that this is the tape. I'm not making this up. You know, that's the thing. And as Paul says, you know, there was four of us in the Beatles. We can't remember what happened. So how people can write these books, I have no idea.
So I was actually quite apprehensive about speaking to you about some of this today because I thought I'm going to have to ask a difficult question because the understanding is that there wasn't a great mood around the camp at the time this was made.
I think it was a long project. The White Album was 4 or 5 months, 4.5 months. I think it was grueling. I think it was surprising. The Beatles had so many songs and the studio couldn't take it. The people in the studios couldn't take it. I mean, if you think about, there's 30 songs on the White Album. During that time, they also recorded Across the Universe, Lady Madonna, Hey Bulldog, Hey Jude. You know, it wasn't as though, and then, you know, they had songs like, Paul started doing Let It Be, and, you know, I mean, they had so much material. And also, as the years went on, the Beatles worked later and later and later. So come the White Album, they start sessions at 10 in the evening, go until 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
Now, in the 60s, that was unheard of. My dad had my sister as a young baby, and it was just intense. And also, when you listen to the tapes, you listen to the Beatles say to him, you know, make a note of this, but I'll let you know when I've got it. Now, that was a completely different shift from my dad going, okay, chaps, we're going to record this song, and then you're going to come in here and you'll invite you up to control until, you know, and I'll tell you what I think. That had changed. You know, they'd taken over. So I think he found it, you know, Sgt. Pepper, he was very much the architect of sound. And with the White Album, they didn't want a blueprint. Mm-hmm. And I think he found that hard. And I think, well, you know, Ringo walked out as
Ringo
well.
Ringo walked out as well, didn't
Ringo
he?
Walked out, I think Ringo walked out a lot because Paul became very interested in playing drums as well. Ringo walked out, they went and recorded Dear Prudence, and Paul plays drums on Dear Prudence.
Yeah.
But then when Ringo came back in, there were flowers
in the
studios.
The drums, yeah.
And, you know, my father talks about Revolution Number 9 with great love and talks about, you know, I think that so much is written, so much is focused on the negative aspects. And I'm not saying there's some sort of Californian way. It's just that listen to all the tapes and you'll hear on the outtakes, it generally doesn't seem that bad. Yeah. I mean, I was in a band, we had way worse arguments than
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
You debunk a myth. Apparently, Beatles' original tapes exist in a nuclear-proof container somewhere, so that if the world was destroyed, all that would be left would be cockroaches and Beatles material.
This is very true.
Is this true? I was told, somebody grabbed me and said, you've got to ask this question for me.
No, they're kept in a vault, but they're really well looked after.
Are there hidden Beatles archive material anywhere in your possession, do you think, that you've not found?
No, the way this is done is, there's hidden stuff you haven't realised, isn't there? Like, you know, there's some outtakes from White Album and bits and bobs that you discover during this process. But we put them all out because that's my job. It's not as though there's not some sort of golem-like attitude going, you know, no, God, I don't want to do the White Album again.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
You throw yourself into these things fully and you try and put everything in, you try and give people as much as you can, you know, and that's the job.